This is Sports Talk with Phil Kornblut, Chris Bergen, and Pat Daniel. Sports Talk is heard across the state on radio affiliates of the Sports Talk Media Network and is streaming live on sportstalksc.com, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. The South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number to call in is 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now, here are Phil, Chris, and Pat with tonight's edition of Sports Talk.
Indeed, indeed. It's a Friday heading into the first weekend of March Madness. And March Madness touched the city of Columbia today with the South Carolina women, number one seed in the women's tournament, going out, opening up with a victory. Pretty much a pedestrian kind of performance by the Gamecocks, I thought. Got a chance to take it in from start to finish. Sit on the floor. They put the media on the floor for the NCAA tournament. I love that. That's the way it should be. And get a good chance to look at the athletes up close and watch what they do. And the Gamecocks today, they advanced past Norfolk State. Final score 72-40. And it was all of that in terms of the ease with which the Gamecocks won. They were about 50-point favorites going in. So it was not a cover for the USC women. I didn't think they played particularly well. I didn't think that they had the get-up-and-go in them. Maybe it's because they were playing a 16 seed that Dawn Staley said afterwards should not be a 16 seed. She believes that Norfolk State team is better than that. But she was able to empty her bench, and almost everybody who played for the Gamecocks scored. They had very balanced scoring. 11 points was the high point mark for them today, but they were, you know, they shot 60% in the opening quarter, and then it went steadily downhill from there. They finished at 39%. They actually gave up 14 offensive rebounds. This is a team, of course, that dominates you on the board, and they did dominate overall in rebounds, but they gave up 14 offensive boards, which is just effort by Norfolk State. You give them credit for the effort. And South Carolina was sloppy at times. This was not a performance that if they were playing later in the tournament against an elite team that they would win with, I don't think. But they did win, and they advance, and they extend the winning streaks. What's that now? 39 in a row, 41 in a row at home, and they'll play South Florida on Sunday. The time to be determined later on today after the games are finished, more or less. And South Florida was an overtime winner, a two-point overtime winner over Marquette in the first game of the day at the CLA in Columbia. And credit to the Gamecock fans. It's a Friday afternoon. It's a game you expect your team to win by 30 or 40 points, and they turned out. Let's see if they put the attendance on here. They had a nice turnout for this game, and the entire lower bowl was filled up, and there were people sitting upstairs. I'd probably say about 11 or 12,000 in the house today, and probably even a bigger crowd. I would expect a bigger crowd on Sunday for round two. So that's the story from South Carolina for women's basketball. And the other big story outside of the men's tournament, which we'll get into in just a moment, USC today announced a contract extension for athletics director Ray Tanner. He was down to a single year on his contract, which was going to expire in 2024, so they added 2 years to that, which keeps him under contract with the Gamecocks through 2026. And also, he gets a little bit of a raise. He was making a little over $1 million per year in total compensation. Now he'll make a little more than that, over $1.1 million-plus for his total compensation package. So we'll talk about that tonight. Is Chris with us? Okay, we welcome in Chris Bergen from the Bergie Palace in Sardis. Did you watch the USC women?
I did not. I did not get a chance to watch them today. I listened to a little bit. I was out and about doing a good bit of things during the middle of the day, so I didn't get a chance to watch them. And I think, you know, just listening to portions of the game and looking back at the statistics, I think you hit it on the head. Probably not one of their better performances, and against a team like, say, Iowa, Stanford, Virginia Tech, somebody with much more talent than Norfolk State has, that could be a performance that gets them beat. But they're up 20-7 at the end of the first quarter, and it's human nature, even for we think of the Gamecocks as a machine. They're still run by humans out there, and it's human nature. When you get up that big, that quickly, that easily against an opponent, you automatically relax. And I think that's a little bit what they did in the second quarter. Dawn Staley must have had a little bit of a come-to-Jesus meeting with their team at halftime, because they came out and blitzed them again in the third quarter to pretty much put it away. The free throw shooting from that ballgame, Phil, would be the one big concern I would have. This is a 70% free throw shooting team throughout the season, and they barely hit 60% of their shots today, 25 of 41. That's not going to get it done in, say, an Elite Eight game or the Final Four. They're going to have to be a little bit better than that, and I anticipate they will be, and I think you'll see a much better performance against South Florida on Sunday. South Florida's concern probably was seeing the Gamecocks, and I use this term tongue-in-cheek, struggle a little bit today, because you don't anticipate back-to-back bad performances from Dawn Staley's team.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is sort of a wake-up call in that it wasn't a scare by any means.
No, no.
But again, I just thought that at times they were out of sync. I didn't see some effort plays that were there to be made. They weren't being made. I really thought the kids from Norfolk State, because I mentioned the 14 offensive rebounds, that's just sheer effort on their part. But the Gamecocks did block 11 shots. The Spartans only converted those offensive rebounds into a few second-chance points because of the blocks. South Carolina kept that pretty much in check. So it was like, look, they were going to win this game big, and you're right. Maybe too much is expected. You expect perfection. You're not going to get it. But I think maybe, you know, winning was the number one thing, getting back into the flow, back into the rhythm, maybe getting some of those gremlins out of your system here in this first round. Because remember now, they hadn't played in going back to the SEC Tournament Championship, which would be, what, 2 weeks from this coming
about.
Sunday was the last time they played. So, yeah, getting back into the flow of things a little bit. So we'll see how they do Sunday. They should be, of course, a big favorite over South Florida. Though I understand, I wasn't there for that game. I understand South Florida's got some inside people, some bigs that don't know if they can compete with the USC women, but they can perhaps cause them to take a step back and be respectful of what they can do inside. As far as the men's tournament is concerned, we are through the afternoon wave for the most part of the games today. And, man, I tell you what, the ballots are taking a beating. The brackets, I'm sorry, are taking a beating all across the country, because I think they're down to under 260 perfect brackets, which means like 200-something people picked Furman to beat to win their game yesterday. If you still have a perfect bracket,
and Princeton,
yeah, and they picked Princeton as well. Yeah, so let me update what's going on. One game that is still being played right now, UConn is leading Iona 54-45 with 14-12 to go in the game. You got Michigan State beating Southern Cal 72-62. Xavier got a real scare from Kennesaw State. First game ever for the Owls in the NCAA tournament. They were leading with about 7 minutes to go, but Xavier came back and won 72-67. Baylor took care of Cal Santa Barbara 74-56. And St. Mary's knocked off VCU. So much for VCU being that 12 seed that could make a run. Nope. 63-51, St. Mary's. Marquette knocks off Vermont 78-61. What about Shaka Smart, man? I tell you what, if they had known back when he was an assistant at Clemson that he was going to grow into one of the best coaches in the country, whether it was at VCU or Texas and now at Marquette, my goodness, you don't ever let him leave the state. 78-61, Marquette, a winner over Vermont. Pittsburgh beats Iowa State 59-41.
That's the only game I've missed today.
Really?
Yep.
You're on fire.
Today.
The biggest,
not yesterday. Today.
The biggest fraud in the tournament was sent home. Creighton beat NC State. NC State, the biggest. What does Clemson think now? Well, of course, if Clemson had won its NIT game the other night, they could sit back and go, see, we told you so. But because they refused to play up to snuff and beat Morehead State the other night, they got nothing to say. You know, you should have taken care of business in the NIT, and then you could have said, see, we told you so. But Creighton beat NC State 72-63.
So as all I those mentioned, after the
I was going to say,
game,
all those who complained about State getting in, there's your answer.
Well, and after the Clemson game, I pointed this out. NC State's offense is geared around taking the quickest bad shot they possibly can, and they did it again today. It's not sustainable. If I'm Kevin Keats, I've got to go back and look in the mirror and figure out how I can get five guys to play as a cohesive unit out on the floor and not five individuals. Of their 24 made field goals, this will illustrate my point perfectly. Mm-hmm. They had three assists today. Three. Mm-hmm. When in the world have you ever heard of a college basketball team have three assists in a ball game? And if you watch NC State, it's understandable. Everything is Smith trying to drive inside and score, and he was great today, 32 points. He was terrific for them. But I mean, all you have to do is figure out, all right, we'll let him score, but nobody else is going to beat us. They don't pass the ball. They take as quick a bad shot as they possibly can. If it goes in, they're in great shape. But they shot 38% today. It didn't go in.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to say, too, you talk about their offense, and we talked about this after Clemson beat them in the ACC mm-hmm. tournament. It was either run lickety-split and take the quickest shot possible or slow everything down and throw it into DJ Burns and let him back you down into the basket. They try two different styles of offense, and they don't really mesh with one another. No. And you're right. They need to take a closer look at what they're doing there because – it obviously is not. They had a good season. They're back in the tournament for the first time in a while, but going in and losing in the opening round is not what you have to do if you're going to be a happy camper on Tobacco Road. All right, so State goes down 72-63. Coming up, we've got Purdue and FDU at 6:50, and then Kentucky and Providence 7:10. This is what I'm looking at for the upset here. I'd love to see Providence knock off Kentucky. That'd be kind of neat. Miami and Drake, Gonzaga and Grand Canyon, Memphis and FAU, Kansas State, Montana State, Indiana, Kent State, and then TCU and Arizona State wraps it up at the end of the night. What did you think of South Carolina's announcement today regarding Ray Tanner and the new contract?
I think it makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, obviously he's going to get criticized. The university is going to get criticized. I've seen stuff on social media that he's the worst athletics director in all of college athletics. I don't know what the criteria is there because he hired Will Muschamp. Is that the only thing that he's gotten wrong? So you just hang your hat on that and say that's why he's the worst AD. I mean, the Shane Beamer hire looks like it's worked out pretty well. Clearly, the jury's still out on Lamont Paris, and Mark Kingston looks like he's got a really, really good baseball team this year. And quite frankly, from an athletics director standpoint, I know nobody ever wants to hear this, but he's in charge of the entire athletic department that has won three national championships under his tenure, 17 SEC regular season and tournament championships. They do pretty well across the board. I mean, from an AD's perspective, Phil, isn't that what he's supposed to be judged upon? I realize I'm living in fantasy land, but if you're an AD, that's what you're supposed to be judged upon, not just 12 football games during the fall, right?
I would agree. I would agree. I mean, you're overseeing a huge operation. I know football is the engine that drives the operation in this part of the world, and people want to judge you simply by, and people say, you know, ADs down here, they are tied to their football hires, and this is true. But there's been a lot of very successful ADs who haven't gotten the first or second football hire right. It's taken them a little bit of time. If you've given them patience as an AD and let them run the program overall. So you look at what he's done, and, of course, Will Muschamp, it looked good. Well, you go back to Tom Herman even, who appeared to be the guy that they were going to bring in until Herman decided to stay put at Houston for one more year. And then he went through some other candidates. Could he have hired a Lincoln Riley at that time? You know, he thought he was too young, I guess. I think they did talk back then. That was a possibility. You could have been a genius had you hired Lincoln Riley, and he turned out to do what he did at Oklahoma and what he's doing at Southern Cal. You'd be looked at as a genius. But he got down to Will Muschamp, and, you know, Muschamp had the greatest reputation in college football as a defensive coordinator. He was the head coach in waiting at Texas, going to replace Mack Brown. Decided not to wait for that, goes to Florida. Wins 11 games his second year with the Gators. Everything's looking great. And then it went south for him there in Gainesville a little bit. And he goes back as a defensive coordinator, kind of reestablishes his reputation there. I still think the Will Muschamp hire, based on the body of work at that time of Muschamp and his resume and his reputation, was not all that bad of a hire for South Carolina. I mean, he was still a guy that I think was pretty well thought of. Yep, he had a bump in the road last couple of years at Florida, but your thinking was he learned something from that and he would do better at South Carolina. And you know what? Second year, what did he do at South Carolina? He won 9 games, and he beat Michigan in a bowl game, and everything was looking hunky-dory. He did go to a bowl game his first 3 years at South Carolina. So it wasn't like he came in just burned and crashed. Now, you know, it got bad the last couple of years, injuries and some poor recruiting and never getting the offensive coordinator situation settled in a good way. And maybe Muschamp just didn't have that kind of personality to make it work long-term at South Carolina, you know, and maybe there was some inside stuff going on. I don't know. I'm just looking at it from the outside. Certainly seems like with Shane Beamer and their approach, it's the, from what you hear, it's like the direct opposite from what it was under Muschamp, you know. You hear all the love talk and the family talk and the welcome home and the closeness and family feel and all that. Was that not there during the Muschamp era? Did people not feel like family? Did they not feel like they were close? Did they not feel loved? Did they not love the university, et cetera, et cetera? I don't know. I'm just telling you what we hear now. So the point is, he gave it 5 years with Muschamp and made a change, and now he's rolling with Beamer, and through 2 seasons, it looks pretty good. But I would only say that it looked pretty good for Muschamp under 2 seasons. So
exactly.
Let's see what happens in year 3. You know, when Muschamp went into year 3, he had a veteran quarterback ready to go. Beamer going into year 3 has a veteran quarterback ready to go. Beamer's having to start over with a new offensive coordinator. So here we go, trying to settle in with a new offensive coordinator. You know, there's some similarities. You know, before you put Shane Beamer in the Coaches Hall of Fame, let's see what happens moving forward here, year 3, year 4, and et cetera. Because Muschamp, they were ready to make a statue out of him after year 2, were they not?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, Muschamp actually had a little even more momentum coming out of his second year because, as you pointed out, they won the bowl game over Michigan. So they had a whole lot of momentum. It seems like Shane Beamer has taken the loss to Notre Dame and actually utilized that to springboard even off the 2 wins, I guess, with Tennessee and Clemson. That may have actually been a better deal going into the offseason. But it looks like both programs, if you put them side by side at this point in time, are on the same trajectory. Muschamp couldn't keep it going. It's Beamer's job now to try and keep it going and improve.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, not everything going back on Tan, not everything has been obviously great. He's had his up and down moments. He fired Chad Holbrook. You know, did he move too quickly on that just from the outside looking at it? You know, I would have given Chad Holbrook a little more time, but maybe things inside weren't great. The Frank Martin fiasco, that wasn't handled particularly well, the way that got away from everything with political people getting involved and the state legislature getting involved. And, of course, you had the mess with Kaslin, the president. All that kind of rolled into one dilemma there in dealing with the Frank Martin situation. So that wasn't good. Maybe a lot of that was over his head, out of his hands, not anything that he could particularly control. But I think by and large, when you look at the overall health of the athletic program, I give him a thumbs up. I give him 2 thumbs up.
I agree.
I mean, as Pat just pointed out, South Carolina's having a very good year this year against Clemson head-to-head. You know, it goes back and forth, but this year it's South Carolina's year head-to-head against Clemson in practically all the sports. And then you look around the landscape of Gamecock athletics. You got a women's basketball team that's got a real good chance winning a national championship. You got a men's tennis team's ranked number 2 in the country. You got a women's golf team's ranked number 4 in the country. You've got a baseball team that's ranked in the top 20 in the country. Now, we'll see how they do going into SEC play, which, by the way, South Carolina and Clemson rained out today. They'll play doubleheaders tomorrow. So, yeah, I think the overall picture is a bright one at South Carolina. Plus, the things they're going to be doing with the new stadium project, and we're talking to them today. Ray had a little media gathering at halftime of the women's game, and, you know, he was thanking the president and the board for all that and just talking about plans for the future, and they're moving forward with this thing. And I was told that, of course, now the end of this month is when the developers all have to have their responses in, And I was told that the response has been really strong, both domestically and internationally. And they will certainly have some great choices to look over when they get down to deciding which developers to work with and then which who's going to get the next proposals to actually, I guess, start talking money and development and all that kind of stuff. So that's moving forward, and that's going to be a big part of what's going to take up the next 3, 4, 5 years of the Gamecock Athletic Department moving forward. I did ask him if he well, I really wasn't joking. I mean, I did ask him, did you ever consider retiring, you know, during this time? Yeah, because he's at that age where you might think about retiring. And you know, he looked a little stunned by the question. I don't know why he'd be stunned by it, but his answer was absolutely not. You know, he has no interest in retiring and wants to continue to work. He feels good, and he wants to get after it every day. So they gave him 2 more years. I'll give you some of the details on that coming up here in just a little bit. So we got that going on as well.
Late 60s? How old is Ray Tanner?
Oh, no. It's late 60s. No. Like 61. 61.
He's 64.
Yeah, 64.
Okay.
It's not late 60s. It's still early 60s.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know. But he was an athlete. He was a coach. I mean, you know.
Sure. No,
he's got more to get up and go than the two of us put together.
Well, and I thought it was, you know, most people, when they first get into work world, now I realize it's changed. 65 was what the target goal, right, for retirement. So my point was, I don't think your question was that far off base. Mm.
While we're at it, happy early birthday, actually. He'll be 65 next week on March 25th.
There you go.
Oh, now he is sort of getting into late 60s. Maybe you were right. You know?
No, and I don't blame him. I mean, for an athlete and former coach, I mean, he probably enjoys being around young people because it keeps you young and vibrant. So I'm sure he's enjoying what he's doing, and why not? He's got one of just 14 jobs right now being an athletics director of the SEC. I'm not sure I'd want to part ways with that myself. I did have a question, though. I thought the timing today was a little bit curious. Wouldn't you want to save this announcement until next week and not maybe somewhat cast a shadow over your women's basketball team opening up the NCAA tournament today? Or was the thinking, well, we're going to have a lot of USC media on campus for the game, so this would be a perfect time because then Coach could go out and talk to all you guys after the announcement's made?
That's possible. I mean, I think there was a board meeting, and they did other things at the board meeting related to the university, not just the athletic department. So I just think it turned out this was the board meeting where they addressed his, because he only had a year left on his contract. So I guess he felt like, you know, now's the time to address it, put to rest any questions. When you're down to your last year of your contract, people start wondering, you know, what's going to happen. Put to rest any of that kind of stuff. And it just so happened to be the same day as the women's tournament. I don't think it took anything away from what was happening on the court. So it all just worked out well from that standpoint. And let's see. Now, where are we? This is Friday. George Brian will be along with Robbie Thames at 7:35. Birdies and bogeys and biceps around South Carolina. George is actually down at the PGA tournament, the Valspar, in Florida. So we'll hear from him from down there. Well, we're going to hear from the USC women. Also, comments from the Furman folks, as, of course, they enjoyed what a great feeling it is. Having covered a bunch of these tournaments over the years, well, I shouldn't say a bunch. I mean, whenever South Carolina Clemson's been able to get in, I've covered them. But it's a neat day, that day in between. If you've won the game the previous day, you've got the interview day and practice day before you play the next round. And that's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun from a media standpoint because you just kind of chill. You get to watch them practice. And talk to the players and coaches. That's a pretty neat thing to do at the location. So Bob Ritchie and the Furman kids, they met with the media today. We'll bring you some of that and keep you up to date on the scores, update the baseball that is being played, and anything else on your mind, sir?
Actually have Jeff Owens tonight, too, as well, don't we?
We do have Jeff. Mm-hmm. If they can race in Atlanta. Atlanta had a deluge, did it not?
Well, and there is news out of NASCAR today that Denny Hamlin is going to appeal his decision to NASCAR to penalize him. So we want to get Jeff's take on that as to whether or not Denny will actually win that argument, since he basically admitted he tried to retaliate on the track. So
yeah.
We'll see if he actually has a leg to stand upon. A
lot of things to talk about coming off that race at Phoenix. You know, that incident there late in the race and the penalties on the Hendrick teams And just the way the race played out, another overtime finish, another sold-out house. They did extremely well on the Western swing in terms of attendance at the races, and, of course, the Daytona race as well. Okay, we'll hit the break here at the bottom of the hour, and we'll get to those phone calls when we come back. All right, Friday edition of Sports Talk. Pat's really excited because it's what? It's St. Paddy's Day Eve or something like that, right? Tomorrow's the big day?
That's right. It's my holiday.
Oh, tomorrow
it's one of my
is
favorite
St. Paddy's Day, though.
No, today is the 17th.
Today, yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Today's the day.
Today's the day, the actual holiday, but then tomorrow is the big festival down in Five Points, and I believe they do something nice in Charleston these days as well. And then, of course, Savannah is one of the ones everybody knows. And then one of your favorite cities in the country, Chicago.
Chicago.
They've got the river green, I would assume, like mm-hmm. they usually do, which is always neat to see.
Yep. Right through the heart of town. And so this is a you celebrate this. You go to church. You have quiet time. You just sort of lay around. Don't do very much.
How much do I share? No, I'm kidding. I very much so enjoyed it in my past, but now at this point, it's one of the best days of people watching. I tell you, for anybody out there that likes to go, listen to some good music, and whether you choose to partake in the festivities, the alcohol, whatnot, that's up to you. But there's always good food down in Five Points. There's good music for, what, 8 straight hours. There's a run for charity. I forget the organization. Apologies. To start off the morning, and then a little bit of a parade. I know my nieces and nephews love going to the parade every year. It's something fun to do for everybody. And then between that and the NCAA tournament this weekend, there's a lot to do here in town.
Yeah, I'll be steering clear of Five Points. I've been through there before when they've had this thing going on. It's a mess, no question. It is a mess. But I hope everybody has a good time and behaves, and there's no trouble and stuff like that. All right, let's get to some phone calls. 888-898-2525, South Carolina Education Lottery, lucky number. And, of course, since 2002, more than $2.2 billion in lottery proceeds has been used to fund life scholarships for the state's college-bound students. Learn more about the lottery's impact at sceducationlottery.com/educationwins. And playing for fun is a win for education. Let's see here. Smitty put on our notes today, Happy St. Patrick's Day, to Ireland's favorite descendants, Kevin McHale, Paul O'Neill, Rory McIlroy, Pierce Brosnan, and Liam Neeson. Have a pint of Guinness and mellow out to Van Morrison. That's courtesy of Smitty. He's all over it, man. He's all over it. Okay, we go first tonight to our calls here, and let's see. It's Keith in Camden with us first. Keith, welcome in. How are you, sir?
I am doing great.
Good.
Been listening every night, but just kind of took a break.
Sure.
Allow other people to call in, but man, y'all did a great intro, and I just had to call. That little 8-minute segment selling me on Ray Tanner.
Yes.
Man, it was good.
Well, do you have some objection to them extending his contract?
No, sir, not at all. Okay. I mean, on a serious note, let's just take men's football, baseball out of it. Let's take the women's basketball out of it. And let's set the major sports on the side. I think he's done an excellent job. But it's just a reminder of the learning curve, the debacle with Spurrier set the football program back 10 years. And that's just an opinion, and everybody's got one. And we're just now getting to the point that we're beginning to recover from it. But you made an interesting comment early, and I wanted to piggyback off of it. You know, the difference between Muschamp and who we have now, Beamer? Mm. Beamer wants to be here. Muschamp never really wanted to be here.
You really believe that? You really believe he didn't want to be here?
From a standpoint of something long-term, look, money is power, and he wanted a job. No, he didn't want to be here. No. And in fact, look the way he left. I mean, what a just a bad decision all the way around. You got a good sample of what he did at Florida. Just not a good move, but that's an opinion. But now we have a guy that wants to be here, and time will tell. Time will tell. And from the women's basketball standpoint, he didn't hire Dawn, but I give him credit for getting, you know, keeping her happy from a financial standpoint.
Well, he had to fight off, I think, in his first – he made a point of saying in his first year at South Carolina – he had to fend off Ohio State, I believe it was. They came at her hard. And so, he had to do some negotiations and keep her happy.
I give him credit. The verdict's still out on baseball. The verdict's still out on football. And the verdict is definitely out on basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt and time will tell. But as far as Muschamp, no. He didn't give a rat's cat about South Carolina.
He still has his house out there on the lake, that fort on that island.
He may have it, but you know what? Look, come on. He didn't want to be here no more than Clemson Tiger fan wanted to be downtown. Nah.
I mean, you may be 100% right. I could be 100% wrong. That'd be very rare that I'd be 100% wrong.
No one knows.
But I didn't see Muschamp in that light. I thought Muschamp saw South Carolina as an opportunity, the rare opportunity. How many chances do you get to be a head coach in the SEC? Especially as quickly, because he was fired. He was fired, had a year, and then he was hired again. That's a pretty quick bounce-back situation. Yeah, there are some. Hugh Freeze, I guess, would be another one who's getting a chance. But he was able to continue as a head coach somewhere else. Muschamp had to go become an assistant coach. Where'd he go? Was it Auburn? I think it was Auburn.
Auburn.
Yeah. And so he had a chance to rebuild things. And I thought when he came to South Carolina, I thought he said the right things. I thought he recruited hard. I thought he put together generally a good staff. Obviously, the offensive issues continued to plague him that he had at Florida. Some of that towards the end, of course, was the situation at quarterback those last 2 years in particular. I mean, look, after Bentley went down in that North Carolina game, they were totally cooked at quarterback. And that killed that season, and they didn't get it. They didn't have it straight for the next season.
And maybe I'm being a little bit too critical, but I'm not disputing whether he was a good coach. I think that he sold people on the NFL, and if you look, he had a good track record. But as far as engaging, if you didn't come to his camp, he wasn't interested in you. Mm-hmm. Just a total different mindset's what I'm saying. Beamer, you get that, you know, hey, come on. We'll take a look at you. That opportunity to broaden from a standpoint of making people feel like that they're welcome.
Yeah.
I never saw that from Muschamp. I felt like he was miserable the whole time he was here. And
I mean, that's just his personality, two different personalities. Muschamp was hardcore, not that Beamer's not, but Muschamp, hardcore, physical, in-your-face football and an X's and O's guys many times, almost every time. His press conferences melted down to a coaching clinic because he was at his most comfortable talking to you when he was talking X's and O's. Beamer's just the opposite. Now that he can't talk X's and O's, Beamer is more – he's very comfortable talking about personalities and families and all the great things. I'll tell you one of the big differences between the two is that Beamer is a constant, non-stop, never-ending promoter of everything South Carolina. And Muschamp wasn't. Muschamp was more in a cocoon about the football program, and that was pretty much it. And you didn't see him around. I mean, you know, Beamer shows up at everything that he can get to from an athletic standpoint, all the different sports. He's a open supporter of everybody's opportunities at these other sports and the other coaches. So, that's a bit of a difference, but that's just personalities. That's the difference in personalities.
Yeah, maybe so. But you're right. I mean, Muschamp did the things that he was – hey, this is part of the job description. You got to go to these traveling Gamecock Club things. No, he didn't care nothing about that.
But well, neither did Spurrier.
That doesn't mean it.
Spurrier hated those things.
Look,
he hated being out there shaking hands with people. He was a guy that would rather just be in his small group and talking golf and talking a little football. You know, he did not like, this is my own interpretation and my own observations, he really didn't like being out in the crowds. I think and that's just not at South Carolina, but I think that was the case at Florida too.
Well, you heard what Ellis said when they were there to recruit, not Lattimore. Yeah, maybe. No, it wasn't Lattimore.
Clowney.
He was late, and Spurrier says, yep, we got to get out of here. Johnson had to literally hold him there to make sure they didn't leave, talking about how, you know, the kid's late, we're leaving. So, yeah, there's a big difference, personalities.
Sure.
But
we got to run, but thank you.
I know y'all do.
Yep.
Great show.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Great hearing from you. Thank you very much. While we're on the topic, let me pass along here some of the details of this new contract for Ray Tanner that South Carolina announced today and give you some of the details. And on his term sheet, contract was going to expire June 30th, 2024, extended 2 years through 2026. Total annual compensation increases to $1.175 million, $562,000+ in base salary, then a supplement and the media outside compensation. And, of course, there's language in here at USC. He can terminate without cause and pay off a certain amount, and same thing with Tanner going back the other direction. So that's pretty much it. And nice, neat package for him that was quietly done by the Board of Trustees and ensures that. So if he serves it out, so he turns 65 this month, right? So if he serves it out through 26, three more years, so he'll be 68. So we'll see what happens then if he wants to continue to serve the Gamecocks. Quickly, let's go to Ron up in Greenville for our next phone call. Ron, good to have you with us. How are you?
How you doing, Phil?
Great. How you doing, Ron?
Man, I'm doing pretty good, I guess. Would you want to retire if you was getting close to $2 million a year?
I don't think so, brother.
Yeah. I really like Ray Tanner, and I think South Carolina made a good deal renewing his contract. When I was in the business, you know, he was always nice to me, and I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, earlier it was said that under Tanner, South Carolina won 17 conference championships. I can't remember any of them.
Can't remember any of them?
No.
Let me see if I can refresh your memory here. Let's see. During his tenure, they've won 3 national championships, equestrian and women's basketball, 17 regular season and tournament championships. So, I mean,
are you talking about women's sports?
No, that's everybody. I mean, they've won in his time as AD, they've won a bunch of on the women's side, basketball, of course, and I think golf has won some, women's golf.
What about men's sports?
Well, now let's think about that. Men's sports, since his time at South Carolina, don't think they hadn't won a football. They won a football division. They didn't want to. No, that was before he was the AD. So, no, nothing in football, nothing in men's basketball from a championship standpoint.
That was 97, the only one they had.
Yeah. So I'd have to say most of that's coming on the women's side, or I'm trying to think on the men's side. Did the men's tennis team win a championship maybe? I'd have to go back and look. But anyway, that's what the record says, 17 SEC regular season and tournament championships.
Well, I tell you, as far as women go, South Carolina, number one school in the nation.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing if you
I got a whole new open mind about women's sports after, you know, sitting there today and watching the USC women do their thing.
Oh, they good. I saw that.
Well, I tell you, when you see them up close, because I don't get to see them up close because we sit, you know, halfway up the arena during the regular season. So getting down there close to watch them, they are athletic, they are tall, they are lean. I mean, they're still limited because they're women. They're still limited in some athletic skills. Let's just be honest about it, right? I mean, they don't jump 3 feet off the ground, and but they're taller and more athletic than practically everybody else they play. That's why they can stand there and out rebound you and block your shot. Had 11 block shots today.
Yeah.
And they'll beat you the most loose balls, and they're talented in a lot of basketball skills. Beal has got an unbelievably beautiful outside jump shot. She just flips that wrist, and same thing with Cook. They are good athletes at the level of women's athletics. That's why they're the best team in the country right now.
Right. Two more things. Mm-hmm. Well, they use a smaller basketball.
They do.
But do you you have a line on the Furman game tomorrow?
Furman is a 6.5-point underdog. I think I saw that last night. 6.5-point underdog.
That bothers me a little bit, but I think Furman has a legitimate chance of making the final 16.
Woo! How about that?
That'd be awesome.
Huh.
Okay,
Ron.
Make some shots.
Thank you, man.
Those guys.
Thank you. Hey, would you be in favor?
I didn't make too many people mad.
No, you're good. You're good. You take care of yourself. Would you be in favor? Somebody was talking about this the other day with me about women's basketball. I mean, was it you, Pat? Of course, you know, got the smaller basketball, and if you wanted to mm-hmm. make the game, the women's game, more exciting, lower the rim. Drop the rim to 9 feet so that there's battles around the rim. There's block shots at the rim, and there's dunking, and there's more play around the rim. Because let's face it, I mean, the game is played well below the rim on the women's side. We'd all agree with that, right?
Sure.
Yeah, and that was me the other night. We talked about that. That's an argument that I feel like has been made since the inception of the WNBA back in the 90s. And I understand the pushback. I certainly don't mean that in any kind of sexist way or derogatory way towards women whatsoever. They've shown, I mean, look, women's athletics are great. Women's basketball, this team would kick the teeth out of most men's teams around our state. They are spectacular. And they have their own level of excitement. But I think especially, and we were talking about this off air, didn't necessarily mean to on air, but I will. I look at the WNBA, and we look at ways to kind of bring the, narrow the pay gap and make these women's WNBA players, Asia Wilson, an MVP in the WNBA, she's making far less than the minimum in the NBA. And I think one way that you could kind of narrow that gap is, of course, to bring a higher revenue stream to the WNBA. And I just think as a business, you always have to look at ways to improve your business and improve your revenue stream. And then you have that trickle-down effect where once there's more revenue being generated, well, the players are then, through collective bargaining agreements, going to be able to find out a way of revenue sharing with the owners, and that's going to create more income for everybody. And one way that I just think would immediately improve the game and the sport and get more eyeballs from people that maybe aren't going to watch the games otherwise, get better attendance at the games, get better TV contracts, radio contracts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you bring the most exciting part of basketball, at least on the men's side, which in my humble opinion is things around the rim. You're right, dunks, alley-oops, thundering blocks up at the rim. We think back in recent years, one of the most replayed highlights is that LeBron James chased down block to seal the win against the Warriors years ago when he blocked Andre Iguodala. Right now we have dunk contests on the men's side. That does not exist in the women's game, and I just think of one way to implement that and add that would be to lower the rim, whether it's 9 feet or 9.5. 9.5 might be a little bit better, but just basic biology, men are inherently taller and bigger than women. And so by lowering the rim, you would now give that same opportunity for those plays from women. And I just think that that would add a lot of excitement. I've been a season ticket holder to USC men and women since I was a little kid with my dad. I go to almost all the women's games, almost all the men's games, and they both add their own positives. But I just really think that's one clear distinction between the two games is you don't have that play at the rim or above the rim in the women's game that you do in the men's game. So I really do stand by that as an immediate way to improve the game and really help to get away with that pay gap a little bit.
Okay, let's hit the break and we'll continue here on Sports Talk. Squeeze in a couple of more of your phone calls. Phone number 888-898-2525. And I want to remind you, if you're looking for a place to vacation this coming summer, maybe later on this spring, give Jimmy Smith a call at paulysvacationrentals.com. That phone number, 843-237-4246. Learn more about your perfect beach getaway from Jimmy Smith and the good folks at paulysvacationrentals.com. That number again, 843-237-4246. We'll be right back.
Parents ask, what's the best way to save for college? I'm State Treasurer Curtis Loftus, and my answer is always open a Future Scholar 529 College Savings Account. It's easy. You can get started online with any amount. It's flexible to adapt your child's college dreams. And you can deduct 100% of your contributions from the South Carolina state tax return. So what are you waiting for? Go to FutureScholar.com and see why it's the smart, easy way to save for college. FutureScholar.com.
Hope, life, and the great Palmetto. What do these things have in common? Scholarship dollars. The SC Hope, the Life, and the Palmetto Fellow Scholarships are funded by the lottery players of this great state. And after 20 years, you've invested over $7 billion in education. $7 billion. Impressive. The South Carolina Education Lottery. When you play, we all win.
Hi, I'm Jim Corbett. I've been an attorney for more than 30 years. There's one thing I've learned about injury cases. It's you need the personal touch. You need the lawyer to get to know you and describe your damages. You don't want a case manager talking to an insurance company and then talking to you and then talking to maybe to a lawyer with limited experience at the last minute to try to settle a case. I talk to you. I find out what your case is about. Jim at JimCorbettAttorney.com. Jim at JimCorbettAttorney.com for your injury cases.
George Bryant here with Tsunami Bar Sports, and wow, Tsunami Robbie, there is now an amazing technology that you can use when you train receiving large game without having to endure pain. Please explain.
George, that is the magic combination. I have three simple words to define that entire concept. Stimulation, not annihilation. Regardless of your training goals, there is a level of stimulation that is optimal for your desired gains. Tsunami Bar's flexible bar technology meets these demands because the user determines the level of stimulation with the amount of speed and force they impart into the bar or training device.
Hey, this is Phil Kornblut. The Tsunami Bar is a terrific training device whether you're working on your fitness or your golf game. It's convenient, it's easy to use, and you won't feel beat up afterwards. Be sure to click on the digital ad on sportstalksc.com and get 5% off any order using promo code BBB5. Don't wait. Order today.
South Carolina's largest hunting, fishing, and outdoor expo takes center stage at the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic, sponsored by Farm Bureau Insurance. Come on down for a good time with over 350 vendors, Dock Dogs competition, extreme raptor show, kids catfish pond, and much more family fun. Hope to see you at the Classic March the 24th through the 26th at the South Carolina State Fairgrounds.
All right, coming up on the top of the hour, and let's take in another quick phone call here before we hit the top of the hour break. And is this Tiger Bryan? Tiger Bryan up in Lancaster. Welcome in, Tiger Bryan. How are you?
How y'all doing, buddy?
Doing great. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Just watching it rain again.
But, oh, is it raining again?
Yeah, you know how it does. It's coming y'all's way, too, I think.
It's what we hear. It's what we hear, yeah.
I mean, that Gamecock caller was talking about Muschamp, Mo. Hey, he's getting paid for Florida. He was a smart coach because he got paid when he got run off everywhere he went. He got paid every time he got left. Did he not?
He did.
I ain't lying. Yeah. I mean, hey, I like to be in his pocketbook. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But, his accountant's a very happy guy.
I guarantee you, I like to be in his accountant. I'd have sold him some.
And I guess you know, now that you brought that up, if you want to say something else about Tanner, and you know, something that didn't go well, and maybe he made a mistake, was he gave Muschamp that huge contract, and it left him with a huge buyout. You know, just like Terry Phillips gave Bowden that huge contract, and had to live with that.
I, it's like this too. The, hey, but hey, wasn't Muschamp about the third or fourth one they wanted? I mean, he wasn't the first one, you know, coach they wanted.
To my understanding, you're right about that. He was a little bit down the pecking order as they went through the process. But, you know, when he got to him and he met with him, he liked him enough to hire him. We got to hit the break. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. You can reach the guys with the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number, 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now back to Phil, Chris, and Pat with the second hour of Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network.
All right, busy, busy half hour ahead, and then birdies, bogeys, and biceps will also be very busy with George Brian, the third coming up. Jeff Owens on NASCAR coming up in just a moment. We'll hear from Dawn Staley and also from Coach Bob Ritchie and the folks there at Furman. Let me update the scoreboard. We have UConn has defeated Iona 87-63. That was the last of the early afternoon games to be completed. Earlier, Michigan State over Southern Cal 72-62. Baylor 74, Cal Santa Barbara 56, Xavier 72, Kennesaw State 67, St. Mary's over VCU 63-51, Marquette over Vermont 78-61. So let's see, everything there has gone to chalk. Yeah, all the higher seeds winners to that point. And then Pittsburgh upset here, 11-6. Pittsburgh beat Iowa State 59-41. Creighton over NC State 72-63. FDU out to an early 12-9 lead on Purdue.
Oh.
That's a 16 versus a 1 there. Providence and Kentucky to come. Drake, Miami, Grand Canyon, Gonzaga, Montana State, Kansas State, and FAU, Memphis, Kent State, Indiana, and Arizona State, TCU. All right, over at USC today, the South Carolina women took care of their first-round business, defeating Norfolk State, and did so rather handily, 72-40. Here's some of what Dawn Staley said after the ballgame.
I'm gonna say it today so we can prep for next year. Norfolk State is not a 16 seed. Just want you to know that. They're not. Very well coached, very disciplined. I mean, they play for 40 minutes. They run some great stuff. And, I mean, if it wasn't for the way we play defense, they would have probably given us a lot of troubles considering how we did not shoot the ball well outside of the first quarter.
Donald, in the second quarter, Norfolk State turned a couple of turnovers into 5 points. You call it timeout. One was the message of that timeout. Two, I don't think that you're much of a fan of calling those in the middle of runs, but why did you feel necessary to go ahead and do that?
We made some pretty good plays, just natural, in the flow. And then I thought we just tried to force things that weren't there or just try to make a spectacular play rather than just – simplifying, and it happened more than once, and I just felt like it was time to just let our players know that, I mean, we don't want to give people opportunities. I mean, in at halftime they had 7 points off our turnovers and 7 points off our seven second chance points. They had 18 points total, like, and then two of the 4 points that they had were just, they stepped through us. We had a pretty good defensive stop. I mean, our defense was doing its job, you know. Our offense was killing us and our inability to control the boards in the first half. So, I mean, those are things that we are really good at. I mean, and discipline, and we weren't that at that time.
Emily?
Ashlyn and Saniah both played some pretty significant minutes tonight. Just what did you see from the two of them that you liked that you wanted to keep going?
I mean, they've been practicing well. And I just tried to get them in the game with some of our older players just to give them some experience because we don't know what our seniors are going to do. They all could leave, and I would like for some of our young post players to really get some experience playing in big games and having to be counted on, and and have and give them some experience to understand that it's going to take more than what they did today for us to be successful next year.
All right, there you go. Some of Dawn Staley, all of it's on our website, sportstalksc.com. In that ball game, South Carolina defensively really picked it up in the second quarter, and the Spartans made just 6 of their last 32 shots in the first half. That's when the Gamecocks really started to pull away and put this one away. That game time on Sunday will be 1 o'clock at the Colonial Life Arena, South Carolina, South Florida, for the right to move on to the Sweet 16 in Greenville Region 1 and playing those next two rounds in Greenville. I think they're going to be on Saturday, Monday of next week. Now to Orlando, where the Furman Paladins are enjoying the fruits of their win yesterday and now getting ready for a second-round game against San Diego State after beating Virginia in a huge upset, a 13 seed, winning and defeating a former national championship team in Virginia, a heavily favored team. Now they get ready for the fifth seed, San Diego State, and they had their press conference today. Coach Bob Ritchie and players, here's a little bit of what they had to say.
Coach, tight turnaround from winning your own game and the way that game finished, there, you probably had to give yourself at least 7 minutes of celebration time. But in the short window, what did you learn about San Diego State, watching film, trying to cram for the test? What did you see?
Well, first of all, I can assure you I took a lot longer than 7 minutes. And what a day yesterday. And a childhood dream of mine to be in this tournament of in any capacity, player, coach. And, you know, this is an event I used to try to skip school for, you know, and watch all the games on Thursday and all the highlights. And to be a part of that yesterday and just what was an unbelievable basketball game for us to come out of what was March Madness, it was incredible. But we did. We spent a lot of last night and this morning going through film. One of my best friends in the business is Nico Medved. And, you know, as I followed him, we play similarly in a lot of ways. So I actually saw two of the three games this year that they played. And, you know, everybody knows the reputation that they have. And so in terms of just a very physical basketball team that's going to rebound as good as any team in the country, and they're going to deny you, they're going to pressure you, they're going to get up on your full court, you've got to be able to withstand the physicality of the game. And they're very old. It's got to be one of the oldest teams in the country. And so there's a lot of experience that's going to come with that. And, you know, it's, you know, some people have asked me, oh, are the two games similar? Like the output in terms of what it looks like, right? Like a, like really, really good defense that's really going to grind you out defensively and efficient offense. But the inputs are different, you know, in terms of how both teams get to what they do. And, you know, we know it's going to be a major challenge tomorrow, but our guys are excited for it.
Matt Rochelle, the Orlando Sentinel. Bob, we talked with the players about this a little bit earlier about taking the confidence from that win and carrying it over to this game with San Diego State. How do you guys, how are you able to do that and maybe kind of temper a little bit the pregame jitters or jitters that maybe come with the idea of you guys getting to this point?
Well, you know, one thing I've told our team, the neat part about this is the story is obviously on a much bigger stage and a much greater audience at this point, but it hasn't changed for us internally. And I think that's been a good thing. You know, y'all have heard this, just the two words that we've drawn on all year, joy and urgency. And, you know, as we were going through just the process of this year and the expectation that, hey, you know, they've got the 2 fifth years back and, you know, we've got to make sure that, hey, we've got to win every game and man, we got to get back to the championship. And, you know, we really were able, probably in the middle of the season around New Year's, just kind of say, hey, you know what? Like, we got to have a little bit more joy in this. And we've got to, we don't get many of these. And to see how they've responded, they've only lost 2 games in this calendar year. And just to see how they've come together, one of the deals that we've come up with in order to have that joy is to understand that, and we've been saying this for a couple weeks now, we had to go to Samford, sold out crowd, to win the regular season. And we won down there the last game of the regular season on national TV. And one of the big things that we've been saying is the noise around the game gets bigger, right? As you play in more important games, what you're going to see on your phone and what you're going to read is going to get louder. The game's the same, right? Like, and we have to have that mentality. The game is the same. And what we have to go do is they're going to try their best to get their identity tomorrow. We're going to try our best to get to our identity tomorrow. And we've got to understand when that clock starts ticking, you know, 20 less, that everything inside those lines is just the game. And then everything around it will be there. And so, you know, you got to normalize this as best you can. I think our group has done a pretty good job with that. You know, I've never been in this tournament in any capacity in my life. I got to admit, the blue signs and the lockers and the lights and all. I mean, look, it's pretty cool. And but that's where the joy and urgency is coming to play. Like, hey, we can enjoy this, but then, hey, we can prepare and we can understand that when this game starts, when this walkthrough starts, when this practice starts, when we're having to do what we have to do to help win a game, then we're going to be locked in. And I think it's a similar message. The game's the same, but obviously the stage is a lot bigger.
Okay, Bob Ritchie seems to have things well under control there with his Furman Paladins as they get ready to play in round number two tomorrow afternoon against San Diego State. Should be a lot of fun to see if the Purple Paladins can make it happen. Now, we're going to make recruiting happen for you, brought to you by Seawells. Our good friends over at Seawells remind you, you got something coming up here in the spring or later on. Just give them a call and let them handle all the heavy lifting when it comes to your very special event, whether it be a wedding reception or a birthday party, or maybe it's a corporate outing. Maybe it's an awards banquet. Probably too late to get help with your St. Paddy's Day party tomorrow. You know, they might be partying themselves over there. But you know what I mean. You got something coming up, something down the road. You give Seawells a call. They'll come to you. You can come to them, and they'll take good care of you. The phone number is 803-771-7385. Online at SeawellsCateringSC.com. The Daily Luncheon Buffet every day next week from 11 till 2. Safety Kaj Sanders, 6'1", 175, Oradell, New Jersey, has not officially narrowed his list to a final two, but right now USC and Penn State clearly hold his strongest interest. He's been to junior days at both. He's got official visits with both, USC June 3rd and State College 3 weeks later. So he says he doesn't really have a top two right now, but he really feels highly about those two programs at this point. He really has developed a nice relationship with Torian Gray at USC. He likes him a lot. Likes the fact that he played two true freshmen at safety last season. That's impressed him as well. So South Carolina very much in the hunt there. He also went to junior days at Duke and Rutgers. No other visits are set for the spring at this point. And he's got a bunch of other offers like Minnesota, Wisconsin, Nebraska, West Virginia, Notre Dame, Louisville, NC State, Purdue, Maryland, and West Virginia. 2025 receiver Mikael Skinner of Riverside plans to visit USC on Saturday. I would believe it's his brother. I think it's Jaleel, who's a tight end down at Miami. 2025 running back, or might be a cousin, 2025 running back Trey Leonard of West Florence plans to visit USC next Thursday. Lexington quarterback Tayden Mines got his first offer today from Allen University. Basketball from Verbal Commits. 6'8 Cam Jones of SC State. 6 foot Emory Knox of Charleston Southern. They're in the transfer portal. I was going to say Portal John, but they don't say Portal John. That's my word. So in the transfer portal, USC has been in touch with Central Michigan transfer 6 foot Kevin Miller, according to Stock Risers. Clemson has offered Dallas Thomas. He's a forward. Dallas Slim Thomas, and he is a 6'9 forward out of Little Rock, Arkansas, and he gets an offer from Clemson. And don't forget, South Carolina will have a bunch of visitors in tomorrow to watch their practice. We'll pass along any information from that coming up over the weekend on our website, sportstalksc.com, on Twitter. Use the hashtag STRecruiting. What you got?
Just real fast, UNC sophomore Dontrez Styles, he's a sophomore forward out of Kinston, North Carolina, entered the transfer portal this afternoon. The reason I mentioned that is his decision back out of high school came down to the Tar Heels or the Clemson Tigers, so that may be a player Clemson and Brad Brownell may be keeping an eye on.
Well, that's the second one of those, because that guard from Wake Forest who went into the portal this week, his name escapes me right away, but he originally committed to Clemson and then decommitted and went to Wake Forest. We talked about him earlier in the week. So don't know if that's somebody they'll jump back in on, but if you've got a previous relationship with him, that's a good start for you. if you want to go that direction. Okay, we hit the break here on Sports Talk. When we come back, we'll check out the NASCAR scene for this weekend as they go racing around the rain in Atlanta. And lots to talk about coming out of Phoenix. Jeff Owens will join us. We'll get his thoughts on what transpired there and what to look forward to here in Atlanta, where the racing has gotten better since they changed some things up there at that track in Hampton, Georgia. That's coming up after the break here on Sports Talk.
Save like a pro with Founders Federal Credit Union. Founders Loyalty Select Account gives you the opportunity to grow your savings at our best rate yet. Fund your account through your favorite Loyalty Select product to get savings today. Not a member yet? Visit RelaxJoinFounders.com or one of our more than 30 office locations to see if you qualify for membership. Services require credit evaluation. Terms and conditions apply. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Life, it has its ups and downs. Sometimes it's little things like hitting every red light or dropping your cell phone. Maybe it's the bills, rent, or pressure at work. But when it comes to the South Carolina Education Lottery, you should never feel like playing will solve everything. The lottery is a game. It's played for fun. So set a dollar amount. Expect not to win and make sure responsibilities, family, friends, and work come first. Visit PlayResponsiblySC.com.
South Carolina's largest hunting, fishing, and outdoor expo takes center stage at the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic, sponsored by Farm Bureau Insurance. Come on down for a good time with over 350 vendors, Dock Dogs competition, extreme raptor show, kids catfish pond, and much more family fun. Hope to see you at the Classic March the 24th through the 26th at the South Carolina State Fairgrounds.
Parents ask, what's the best way to save for college? I'm State Treasurer Curtis Loftus, and my answer is always open a Future Scholar 529 College Savings Account. It's easy. You can get started online with any amount. It's flexible to adapt your child's college dreams. And you can deduct 100% of your contributions from the South Carolina state tax return. So what are you waiting for? Go to FutureScholar.com and see why it's the smart, easy way to save for college. FutureScholar.com.
Major Downer here from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. Boating season is just around the corner. To make sure that your boat is ready, check your registration sticker and ensure it's current. Find your registration card, make sure your life jackets are in good shape, and check your fire extinguisher as well. For more information on boating or boat titling questions, visit dnr.sc.gov/boating.
Atlanta. Let's go racing in Atlanta. If the rain holds up and lets them drive fast and make left-hand turns in Atlanta, back to the East Coast we go after the West, basically West Coast swing out to L.A., Vegas, and Phoenix, and now back to Atlanta. Jeff Owens joins us here in the fast lane. Man, I tell you what. What did you see as the big story out of Phoenix? So many moving parts there besides William Byron winning again in overtime and a sold-out crowd. That's all good, but then came penalty days later in the week. What did you make of everything?
Yeah, this has been a week of penalties. They really came down on Hendrick Motorsports really hard. All four teams got fined $100,000 for tampering with some parts, some unapproved parts, popped those teams really hard. They all lost 100 driver points and $100,000. It was the largest team fine in history. So big deal for that. Those guys, that's going to put those all four of those drivers, except for Chase Elliott, of course, who was injured. But the three Hendrick cars that are healthy are going to be way behind. I mean, they got docked 100 points, so they got a lot of ground to pick up. But, of course, Byron's already got two wins, and you expect Larson to win two and possibly Bowman. So they'll probably still be in the playoffs. But so that happened, and then they also popped Denny Hamlin, a $50,000 fine and some points for wrecking Ross Chastain on the last lap there. And then he went on a podcast and told everybody he did it on purpose, which wound up costing him $50,000. So once again, Denny sticks his foot in his mouth and gets penalized for it.
That's a routine thing for him, huh?
Yeah, he's got a habit of that. And, you know, he could have gotten away with this. They've had a year-long feud, you know, over Chastain running into him a few times. And it looked like on the broadcast that he did run Chastain into the wall. But, you know, it looked like it could have been a racing incident. And then he goes on his podcast and says, nope, I did it on purpose. So he sort of forced NASCAR's hand, and they fined him $50,000 and 25 driver points. So, you know, Denny Hamlin having a podcast is probably not a good thing for his career, I would think.
Well, Jeff, and then he comes out today and says, after careful consideration, I'm going to appeal my penalty. Isn't this much akin to a bank robber standing there in the middle of the bank with the bank, you know, the money and saying, no, it's not me. I didn't do it.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
right.
Does he have a leg to stand on?
He's got no shot to win that. That was, I mean, again, and NASCAR said when they issued the penalty that, you know, to us, it was a racing incident. But what do you do when a driver comes out and says, yep, I owed him, so I wrecked him on purpose? They had no choice but to fine him. So, you know, he could have got away with it. But, again, you know, Denny likes to stir things up and run his mouth. And sometimes – and by the way, I respect that about Denny, because he does tell it like it is, and he's often right. But that was a bonehead move there. You don't come out and admit it. You know, you don't – plead guilty to the crime on the air, or you're going to get in trouble, and he did.
Back to the penalties, especially to the Hendrick Motorsports drivers, Jeff. I get NASCAR wanting to swing a pretty stiff penalty at these guys, but did they go overboard, do you think? Because you look at, say, a William Byron, Alex Bowman, those type guys up towards the top of the point standings, as you pointed out, they're dropped back into the 20s. As a matter of fact, Chase Elliott actually moved up, I think, because all his teammates went behind him after the penalties. But in your mind, were the penalties, especially the points, were they fair for what Hendrick is accused of doing?
I think, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, I've heard both sides of the story, and it sounds like from Hendrick's standpoint that, you know, they went to NASCAR and said, hey, you know, is this okay? And the communication was not clear, and they took away what they did. So they actually did not race with it, and there was no, it had no impact on the race. I think the penalties are pretty severe. I think NASCAR is clearly trying to send a message to the rest of the garage that if you do this kind of thing, we're going to bust you. I suspect they are appealing, and I suspect in appeal that some of the penalties might be reduced a little bit. That's what I would do. But, again, you know, NASCAR has made it clear that they're not going to allow you to tamper with these pre-approved parts. You know, everybody gets the parts from the same place to keep the field level. And the last thing they want to do is you taking these parts and modifying them and doing that in order to, you know, to get an advantage. So they're trying to stop that.
So Kevin Harvick was looking good for a win at Phoenix, and then they go into the pits and they take on four. Everybody else took on two. And that cost him, and he had a chance to win and did not. Now they go to Atlanta, where he's got three wins, and you see this particular rendition of Kevin Harvick now getting a little bit better and better by the race?
Well, yeah, I do. It looks like they've got a fast car, and I do think he's going to be a factor. This weekend, who knows, because, you know, normally he would be a contender at Atlanta, but, you know, this is the race they've turned into another restrictor plate race, so it's going to be a lot like Daytona and Talladega. It's going to be a wild crapshoot. Who knows who's going to win? And by the way, the two cars that won in Atlanta last year were both Hendrick cars. So they'll probably be back up front again. But I think this will be another wild one. It'll come right down to the finish. There'll probably be a big wreck. It'll be a lot like Daytona and Talladega, and there's literally no telling who could win it.
Yeah, it's going to be a green track too, I imagine, with all the rain coming through over the weekend.
Yeah, that'll be a factor. This is a fairly new track, new pavement, and that's why they've been so fast there. So it will be. There'll be a lot of grip, a lot of grip, a lot of speed, and probably a lot of wrecks.
Looking forward to it, Jeff. Thank you so much, my friend. Great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks,
all
Jeff.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
Jeff Owens in the fast lane here on Sports Talk. George Bryan, Robbie Thames up next. Birdies, bogeys, biceps around South Carolina. We'll be back.
Straight down the middle. It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit. And that's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been found to this day.
Oh, after a very hard and hectic week, no finer way to put a cap on it than by sitting back, relaxing, and talking about golf. I mean, look, golf is an intense, it's a pressure-filled game, but it's also kind of a laid-back, easy-going, take-your-time, enjoy-the-walk kind of game, unlike, you know, basketball, football, even baseball to some degree. So it's nice to, on a Friday evening, to talk about the great game of golf, which is so important to the state of South Carolina, both in terms of our activities and our income. So with that said, we welcome in once again for another edition of Birdies, Bogeys, and Biceps, the man who brings the birdies. That would be George Bryan III, the man who brings the biceps, Robbie Thames, and of course, I bring the bogeys to the conversation. Welcome in, gentlemen. George, how are you?
Oh, couldn't be better. Well, I guess I could be a little better if I was heading back to the lodge rather than up I-75 north.
That's no fun. I can promise you that. Anything on I-75 is no fun.
Yeah, well, I think I'm in one of your ruts because I don't even have to steer. It just goes.
That's good.
Spent the last couple of days at the Copperhead, and, you know, I heard you say golf is relaxing, and I think the people watching the game, especially in the stands, they're relaxing because they have, well, I call it cold, relaxing beverages.
Mm.
And but that dadgum Copperhead is not too relaxing. And I walked around a couple days, and it's a lot of fun walking around. It is beautiful, but relaxing doesn't really sum it up for the guys playing. It's tough down there. Even though there are a few that lit it up, the Copperhead got the best of most.
Well,
and Wesley was one of them.
It's a reason why it's got the name of a poisonous snake. You're right. Tough day for Wesley. So the leader is Adam Schenck, 7-under par after a 66 and a 69. Kramer Hickok, 6-under, 68-68. Cody Gribble, 5-under, 65. You know, and we'll get to a couple other guys in a minute, but, I mean, unless you really follow the golf tour closely, not too many people are going to know who these fellas are. Adam Schenck, the leader, is out of Purdue. He's a native of Indiana, played his college golf at Purdue. Who would know him? Not too many people unless you're really following the game closely. Kramer Hickok. And then you got Tommy Fleetwood, though. You know who he is. He's at 69. And Jordan Spieth, he's at Tommy Fleetwood is at minus 5 after a 69, and Jordan Spieth is at minus 5 after a 70, and Davis Riley is at minus 5 after a 68. And then we got Lucas Glover, now just checking on some of our guys that we follow, 72 today. He's at 3-under. Justin Thomas is 3-under after a 70. Here's Ben Martin having another good tournament, a 71, minus 2. I'd like to call him Gentle Ben, but that's already been taken. Andrew Novak, a 70. He's even. Doc Redman, a 69 plus 1. Kyle Stanley, a 70 plus 3. Jonathan Bird, a 69 plus 4. Kevin Kisner, a 70. He's plus 5. Carson Young, a 73 plus 6. And, oh boy, Wesley Bryan, a pair of 77s, George, plus 12. Tough couple of rounds out there for the younger.
You know, it he had most of that come on just a few holes. And a golf course like the Copperhead, it can make just about anybody look like they're playing bad, even if they're not. And tell you what, it is. It was, you mentioned Ben Martin, really, really nice to see him back. Not just back, but healthy. And he's in good shape. His game looks fantastic. I saw Jonathan Bird play a little bit today, and Jonathan had a good day. He didn't have a good day yesterday, but you mentioned Adam Shank, the leader. One interesting fact about that, and I'm not sure where he resides, but he does play quite a bit at Congaree, or did. So be fun to find out where he actually lives, because I know he's played a lot of golf right down at the Congaree. So interesting fact about that leaderboard.
Yeah.
Guys from Texas doing pretty good. Cody Gribble and also Kramer Hickok. These are Texas, University of Texas players. And obviously you mentioned Jordan Spieth. So,
but let me say this about Wesley. Let me say this about Wesley now. I mean, yeah, you have to admire this. Just looking at his card today. So he takes a triple bogey on the par 3 13th. So I imagine he got into some trouble there, water or whatever, took a triple bogey. But then on the par 5 14th, he bounces back with a birdie, and he pars his way in. I mean, you know, you go bogey at 12, triple bogey at 13. You could have just caved, but he finishes one under for the last four holes. As an instructor, when you talk to a student about getting over a disastrous hole, I mean, that's a good example, right? You flush it, you bounce back, and you finish strong, and that's a pretty good finish, those last four holes.
Well, and I can tell you one thing for sure. If you don't learn the biggest secret in golf, and that is the most important shot is always the next shot. Now, obviously, you're standing over to your golf ball getting ready to swing. You're not thinking about – you're thinking about the shot at hand. But once the greatest separator between the absolute – you know, you got players on tour, even there, I think the only person I've ever seen play golf that does better on the next shot, and I don't know all the greatest players. I'm just saying the ones that I know and the ones that I've watched. The only person I've seen better than Wesley at that is Dustin Johnson. That's a fact. And so I think we're on the topic that makes the biggest difference, because anybody out there listening, if they have the ability to move to the next shot, without regards to what happened on the shot they just hit, they're going to play better golf almost every time. And that's one of those that is fun to talk about. Especially for those who play a lot of golf, competitive golf in particular. So it's always the most important shot, the next shot.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring in Robbie Thames from Tsunami Bar Sports. And I know, Robbie, you have not only do you work with people from the physical side of it, but you work with them like George does from the mental side of things inside the physical laboratory, because I'm sure you got people that you're working with, they're dog tired, they don't want to do that extra rep, they don't want to take that Tsunami Bar and do that extra bit of lifting or stretching or whatever. And psychologically, you got to work with them and help get them over the hump.
Yeah, we have, you know, I was coached when I was coming up, and I kind of carried the baton when I began coaching you know, you got to take in the weight room anyway, you take people really to a place that they didn't think that they could go. And once they get there, then you got to help them understand that you've got another gear in you, and you just got to bear down, focus on what you're doing, and let's execute the next lift, shot, at bat, you know, pitch, whatever it might be. You've got to be able to have the memory of the goldfish and forget about the last thing, and let's get on to the next thing. And it works that way. It always worked well with me in sports. If I gave up a home run, and you know, the only thing that existed after that was me, my catcher, the batter, and the umpire. That was it. And we were just going to make the next pitch. So, but in the physical world, it's the same thing. You get under, a particular lift, and you're tired, and you think you've had a tough day, and you're just not mentally into it. You got to find that gear. You got to reach down deep. That's when you find out the separator, the people that really want it, and the ones that are just kind of pretending. And sometimes that's the separator.
George, I was out to see you guys. Last week, I think it was, and over at Tsunami Bar Sports in the Golf Center over there in West Columbia. And, man, you guys got a lot of stuff going on. You're adding on from a golf/sports standpoint. What's the – George and Robbie, y'all kind of chop it up here as far as what you got going on and what's in the future there that people are going to want to get involved with, George.
Well, golf fitness is where I come into the Tsunami Bar picture, and the fitness, the Tsunami Bar technology, we've talked about it. We talked about it for a number of months. It's the only technology out there that actually can – it makes taking that muscle to fatigue and even expiration, just complete obliteration, it takes it to a level of fun. Now, what we're going to do – at the Tsunami Bar Training Center is golf fitness. We're going to bring some golf to the Tsunami Bar table, and we're going to be able to do it outside. And there's going to be actually a short game player development course that it's currently under construction. We got to show people what we mean with golf fitness and the Tsunami Bar technology. Golf's just one of the sports that Tsunami Bar has significant influence. And that triple B, what is it, triple B? What's that code to get the discount if anybody out there wants to
triple B to the triple B five. Sort of like a triple bogey five, if that would be, I guess, on a par two, which I would have on a putt-putt course. But, yeah, triple B five.
Well, I can tell you that the I'm in there today and the players dining. If you go in the middle of the day break, 11 to 12 to 1, you see – players that tee off in the afternoon, they're finishing their training session. They're working out. They're getting a good program in before they go play. And then you see the players that are finishing early, as we're finishing, you see them in their training clothes resting up. And Tsunami Robbie, talk a little bit about fitness and where the Tsunami Bar fits in with golf. Take it away.
Yeah, you know, first off, I just want to echo just what you said about the new developments at our center. I'm really looking forward to this. And the short game is one of those things that gets ignored largely with the driving range ball beaters. And I am confessing right now, I'm one of those guys. I go out there and used to be, you know, a couple hundred balls a day. And I loved it, but it didn't help me with the short game any. It didn't help me score. It might have got me down the fairway a ways, and then I can hit it somewhere around the green. So I'm at 480 yards. I'm there in two, and then it takes me four strokes to get in the hole. So it don't score very well. This short game area that we're going to have is going to be premium. And when I started focusing on the short game, guess what? The scores came down. And this is something I'm looking forward to. I believe it's going to be nine holes of a pitch or kind of an extended chip or a pitch up to 40 yards, I believe, is the longest. But then we've got a little bit longer hole with a 100-yard and 85-yard tee box and maybe even a 45 or 50-yard tee box to go along with that. I don't think that's solid yet. But these are the things that need to be worked on. And when you combine that with the fitness that's going to be available there to take advantage of the whole package to get flexibility, mobility, increase your speed receptors so you can get the full backswing, whatever your limits might be, get there, and then accelerate through impact so you can take advantage of what you've got to be able to hit the ball as far as you're capable of hitting it. And everybody wants to hit it a little bit farther, and you want to be accurate, and those are the things that we'll have around there in the Tsunami Bar and the technology. We'll all play a part, and I'm looking forward to it. It's not can't open quick enough, but I know we got to wait just a little bit.
If I may insert something here, Robbie and George, and correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, let's face it. You talk about hitting it farther, and there's things that you can do, obviously, to help you hit it another, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 yards, whatever the case may be. But at some point in time, you max out, right? You're going to max out. You're not going to hit it any longer. In fact, you're going to get shorter as time goes on. But the short game is something you can always control, regardless of your age. Regardless of how long you've hit the ball, when you get around the green, George and Robbie, I mean, if you're good around the short game, you can save yourself a ton of shots. And this sounds like a great way and a great place to help you work on the finer points of that short game that's always going to be there. The long game's not always going to be there, right? But the short game's always going to be there.
It can turn a bad day into a good day. Sure.
Exactly, Robbie. And it'll turn an average day, convert an average day, bring it up to a great day. And the cool thing about the number one at the end, what separates the Tsunami Bar technology from all other equipment or technology is the fact that the bar is bendable. It has the properties of a golf club. Now, stay with me here. Tension is the destroyer of a golf swing. Let me repeat that. Tension destroys the golf swing. Now, when it comes to the short game, you got to have feel and touch. Well, there's no other technology out there that allows the detailed study of tension like the Tsunami Bar. And I can promise you that in the next few weeks, months, and certainly the next couple of years, the world's going to find out. And the way it typically happens is inside out. That's the old oak tree is solid inside to out. So the inside I'm referring to is the industrial sports. They know about our technology, and they're just not willing to share so much intel. Don't blame them. They need to keep their competitive secret. From the body, the inside out, what I'm talking about, thing that really matters for athletics, that tensile strength, tendons and ligaments, small muscles connect to the large muscles to keep that chain reaction going. Tim Taylor calls it that Tsunami Bar contractibility. So there's something special about the technology, and how it can influence the short game is through tension and touch, baby. Tension and touch. That's a fact. Is that not right, Tsunami Robbie?
Yeah, you know, when you mentioned that, it really made me kind of think about the Tsunami Bar lineup. And we certainly do have bars that you can load with a lot of weight, and you have to get up under it, and you have to muscle it. You have to really just work on brute, absolute force and strength and muscle it. But on the golf application, that's not applicable at all. In fact, if you try to muscle a battle stick and make it work properly, you're not going to get anywhere with it. You have to manipulate it with finesse and touch. You have to be able to feel how the bar is working so you can react to it and make it work harder against you so you can get a muscular or neuromuscular response out of it. And it really applies to athletics, and I'll take that to any of the athletics. That's why all the coaches, almost to a person that we've talked to over all these years, once they get the Tsunami Bar in action with their athletes, they all raise the level of their athleticism. They get more explosive, more powerful, quicker. Their response time is quicker and faster, and they're just able to do things that they weren't able to do before just by going in and doing sets and reps like they had been for however long they've been, you know, in their weight training program. The addition of the Tsunami Bar technology brought something up and elevated their game, and they became better athletes. And a lot of them have state championships or been to state championship title games since the introduction of Tsunami technology to their programs.
Well, I tell you, I mentioned this to George. I think he might have mentioned it last week. Everywhere I go now, when I'm around teams or locker rooms or whatever, I'm seeing the tsunami bar. I saw South Carolina baseball players when I followed them off the field in Greenville in the middle of the Clemson series, and I'm sure the Clemson players had the same thing. I just happened to be going off the same side as the USC players, and some of the guys were carrying tsunami bars with them. But the baseball players, I guess they use it in their warm-ups and use them in the dugouts to stay loose and things like that. So, I mean, it's a technology and it's a tool that has spread from the golf world into the baseball world. And I guess what you're saying, George, maybe in the football, well, definitely in the football, in the locker room, because that's where it was created. And it's just making its way throughout the various sports teams that are looking for another way to improve their work inside the weight room or another way to limber up before they go into competition.
Well, unfortunately, we have there's another world out there that Wesley Bryan has unfortunately had the great benefit of the tsunami bar technology, and he had two injuries. One was quite possibly a career-ending injury, and it wasn't. I can't sit there and say the tsunami bar brought him back from both, because these surgeons that had to go in and fix his stuff, they did a great job, especially the one on his wrist recently. But the rehab piece for the tsunami bar technology, there'll be more talking about that in the future, because there's nothing out there that fires up that central nervous system and inspires just the body's natural mending. So it's not my area. That's not my specialty. I'm not a doctor, but I can tell you, when I see the influence of those who have been injured using the product, it does make a difference. Now, I tell you, I was watching Jonathan Bird. Jonathan Bird takes great care of himself. And I had to compliment him on looking good. I said, Jonathan, you look good. Shifting gears a little bit, we got to talk a little about the Invitational. The Junior Invitational is being hosted by Sage Valley, just outside of Aiken, and somewhere between Aiken and Augusta, you'll find a hidden gem called Sage Valley. Well, they're doing a very special golf tournament. It's an international field, and can't pronounce the leader's name. Maybe you've got it in front of you. Aldrich Portgeiter, William Connor second, and Jackson Colvin third. They're 9-under, 4 and 3-under. Jackson Bird is tied for 13, and that's who we were talking about. When I say we, Jonathan and I was asking him how his son was playing. And, 13, Jackson must be at +2. Shot 1-under yesterday in 13th place.
Yep.
I'm not sure. Do you have that pulled up, Phil?
I do. Jackson Bird +2. He shot 75-71. And the leader, as you mentioned, it looks like it's Aldrich Portgeiter, 65-70. He's 9-under. Connor Williams, 73-67, is 4-under. Jackson Koivun is at 3-under, along with Byung-ho Lee at 3-under. It's good playing. It's a tough golf course.
Nice. It is. It's a lot more difficult golf course than these young fellows are making it look. And I didn't get much intel on whether that event would be open to the public or not. I do know if you can get through the gate, it is unbelievably beautiful. And with Augusta coming up just around the corner, this is the time of year in South Carolina and the Carolinas. So we visited Westlake Country Club. Freddie Wadsworth was our guest last week. We got to have Freddie back on.
Yeah.
And Freddie's Hammond team, once again, played great. He's got some young players that I'm sure we will be talking about, not just in college golf, but on the PGA Tour. And speaking of college golf, Phil, do you have any updates? No, the Gamecocks won last week. And you usually can bring me current, especially me heading north on 75.
Well, they won the tournament they were in a couple of weeks ago down in Aiken, and as far as the Gamecocks men go, and then in their last outing, I'll tell you that they didn't fare as well. As I pull that up here, they played at the tournament at the Dunes Club in Myrtle Beach, which you know is a beautiful course. They played in the General Hackler and finished back in that one a little bit. See if I can pull that up real quick before we say goodbye. They ended up being ninth in that one. East Tennessee State won it. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Have yourselves a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. And that'll do it for Sports Talk. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, sir. Pat. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday.